Good morning, welcome back to Nachiyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on the 8th chapter of Shmuel Beis. David HaMelech now at this point in time has really has accumulated a great amount of success. He's tried to build the Beis HaMikdash, has been told not to. And at this point in time, what's the next step? So this perek actually deals with the military conquests of David HaMelech. This is really establishing the power and might that David has in the region. It's a very powerful perek, a short yet succinct perek. So here we go. The first thing we're told is that David HaMelech humbles the Philistines, right? He humbles them. Vayachas mesek amamiyad plishtim. He captures, you know, their strongholds and puts them in a place where they're no longer going to be attacking, at least right now. The next thing he does is he captures, or he attacks Moab in the east, and he puts them on, he lies them down to the ground, and kills, it says, he uses two ropes to kill and one rope to live, which means to say that he is killing two-thirds of them, and the rest are sent as servants. Bit of a disturbing description over here. And then there's the conquering of Aram. Aram is the area of Syria today, where he goes up north northwards to conquer it, and it says that he conquers Hadad Erzer ben Rehov, who's the king of Tzova, the king of the Aram Tzova area. And going up to the Euphrates River, that's how far David reaches. And he captures, that we're given numbers, about 1,700 chariots and 20,000 infantry. And what David HaMelech does, interestingly enough, is he hamstrings the horses. And that means to say he makes them inoperable for action. Then David HaMelech goes to Aram Damascus. So he goes up to Damascus. I apologize. Damascus comes to help Hadad-Ezer, and David not only pushes them back, but kills 22,000 of their soldiers and establishes a kingdom there, where they now pay tax to David HaMelech, and he takes many of their gold emblems and symbols from their place as their homage. In the meantime, Toi, who is the king of Hamas, which is another city nearby, hears about this and sends a army also to help Hadad Ezer in Aram, and David HaMelech also in the same way sends out to fight Toi. Toi actually tried sending out peace to David HaMelech, but David HaMelech knew that he was an Ishmael Hamas, a man of war, and disregards that and conquers him and takes the spoils. And then it describes how much he took from all these people, from Aram, Moab, Ammon, Plishtim, Amalek, from Hadad Ezer ben Rehov, and David HaMelech brings back all this booty, all this loot to the land of Israel. He also then establishes his ministers and governors in the land of Edom, and they are taxpayers. And this end section ends with Vayosh Hashem es David b'chol asher alach. Hashem saves David in everywhere he went. And then it goes on to describe the last few psukim of this parak are dedicated to David HaMelech's monarchy and his cabinet. The pasuk, which is the strongest of all of this entire parak, is Vayimloch David al kol Yisrael. David was the king over all of Israel. Vayi David oseh mishpat utzdaka l'chol amo. He was doing righteousness and judgments to all of his nation. And then it describes how his general was Yoav ben Tzeruya, his mazkir, his secretary, was Yoshafat ben Achilud, his kohanim were Tzadok ben Achitub and Achimelech ben Eviasar. It's interesting, Achimelech is the son of Eviasar. Eviasar was the original kohen, who was the son of Achimelech. His son obviously is named after his grandfather, who was killed by Shaul. And Tzeruya was this Sofer, and Benao ben Yehoiada was in charge of the Crazy and Place, which is often understood as the Gomorrah, understands it as the Urim V'Tumim. There's an enigmatic description that the children of David were Kohanim. We have to think about what that could mean, a little bit of an enigmatic statement. There are a lot of things to think about when this looking at this parak as an overall, as a big picture. Number one is it's very strange the way that David HaMelech treats the Moabites. It sounds like he's killing non-combatants when he measures them out and kills two-thirds of them. That's a very disturbing description. What's really going on over here? Rashi, Radak, most of the Mephoreshim point out that Moab had actually taken David HaMelech's family as safe haven, as we saw in Shmuel Aleph, and they were killed. And because they were killed, David HaMelech, this is David HaMelech's revenge, or perhaps precedent setting, that you don't kill the family of a king. And as disturbing as it is, nonetheless, there is a background to this, what the Radak and Rashi suggest over here. Another thing to think about when looking at this is that David HaMelech, as opposed to re-requisitioning the horses of the enemy, hamstrings them. That means to make them ineffective for any use. Why does he do that? So on the one hand, if you go back to Sefer Yehoshua, Perek Yud Aleph in Sefer Yehoshua, which we did a few months ago, We noticed that that was the command that Hashem gave to Yeshua back to the conquest of the land, that when you capture their horses, hamstring their horses and burn their chariots in fire. That was the command in the original conquest of the land. It's almost as if David HaMelech is patterning his conquest right now after what was done then. It's almost as if he's recreating what should have really happened at the times of Yehoshua, which was the conquest of the land. That's level number one. Number two, Rabbi Angel points out, is that it could also be just simply not knowing how to deal with more complicated, sophisticated military. Meaning to say, requisitioning things, certainly military equipment, requires a lot of expertise, and perhaps Israel did not have the same expertise as their enemies, and they didn't use it. Because you know, today, when you go to visit the tank museum in Datrun, you'll notice that many of the tanks are, in fact, Egyptian and Syrians, which were requisitioned after numerous battles. They're very expensive equipment. Not doing that might be a sense of, in a certain sense, not lack of expertise. It's just the opposite kind of perspective. At the same time, there's another meridian which is flowing through here, and that is, we know that the king in the Torah is regulated not to have too many horses. Lo yarbe lo susim. Why not? It's a machlokes in the Mefarshim. The Rambam says that it's a problem only to have aristocratic pleasure horses. Meaning to say, of course, use horses, work horses, military horses, that's fine for the king to have as many as he wants. It's just the pleasure horses which are a problem. The Ramban says no. The king shouldn't even have enough a huge stable for the military, because a king needs to know that his salvation comes from Hashem. It's interesting that David HaMelech's hamstringing his horses might be an indication of his expression of bitachon in Hashem, more like the Ramban's idea that I don't need military horses to win these wars because Hashem is with me, as the Perek is pointing out. Whereas we see that Shlomo HaMelech starts wavering on this. Shlomo HaMelech starts acquiring military horses, and that leads him down a very dark road. Might be a different perspective on that same mitzvah. These conquests are very fascinating. There's a whole last point to think about in this entire parak, and that is that it is a little complicated. Were these legitimate conquests? Bereshis Rabbah, the Midrash tells us that it was a little complicated when David HaMelech went up northwards to fight against the Syrian area, against the Aram Damesek and Aram Tzovah. They pulled out Yagar Sadusa, which was monument made between Yaakov and Lavan, that there would not be any military expeditions between the area of Armenia and between Israel. Not so simple. Not so simple that David HaMelech had the right to go there. And in fact, when he went to attack Edom and Moab, they pulled out the Psukim in the Torah, which says, "V'lo yisiskar b'milchama." Don't go and bring them into battle. So the Midrash describes very strikingly how David HaMelech removed his armor, removed his finery, went back into the base of Midrash in his robes, and consulted the Sanhedrin. Was he allowed to make these conquests? The Sanhedrin ruled that he was allowed to do this because they had started the aggression first, and he, as the king, was defending his land by doing this. And therefore, he went back and went as far as to conquer them. It is interesting that there are critical lines of thinking on David HaMelech in Chazal for these conquests. And it seems to be that maybe the extremity that he went to, the extreme ways he killed and took loot, might have been under criticism here. And ultimately, these were not long-lasting conquests. By the end of David and Shlomo's time, certainly they were torn back from the extended kingdom, and they are considered for halachic purposes what's called kivush yachid, a single or an individual's conquest, as opposed to a national conquest. And this is true for agricultural halachic laws in those areas, in the area of Syria today. What the status is considered more of Chutz La'aretz than it is in Eretz Yisrael proper, because of this is a kivush yachid. It is interesting that this is an attempt where David HaMelech is performing what it looks like a messianic leadership role, which is where the Bris Ben Abisarim talks about the extended Israel from Egypt all the way to the Euphrates. This is what David HaMelech was doing, and it was a moment where Hashem was clearly proclaimed in Israel. We hope for that moment that in Mashiach, when once again this prophecy will be realized once again. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.